Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this week we're going to tell you a story. A story about the theater. For many of you, it might be a romance. Girl gets theater, girl loses theater, girl gets theater back. For some of you, parents mostly, it might be a tragedy. Just when I tried to get out, theater pulled me back in. Liz Stanley, how would you describe your story?
Eclectic.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 421, Returning to Theater. For this last week of 2014, during this festive time of year, I thought I'd share with you a story of a Christmas miracle, or possibly, depending on your point of view, a Christmas tragedy. As you'll hear, Liz Stanley is a longtime fan of the RSC and a new friend we met because of our recent run at Marin Theater Company. And apparently, Liz was moved to resume a career in the theater because of exactly the kind of nonsense you've been accustomed to hearing on the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Let's let Liz explain. Tell me the first part of the story first. How did you get into theater to begin with?
I started when I was five.
Right.
Really, really young. There was really no hope.
Okay.
Like, it was just over from the very beginning.
Right.
I think it was a little silly Girl Scout show that we did, something with witches, and I got to climb into a cauldron, and that was the best thing ever. You know, who doesn't love climbing into a cauldron when they're five?
Sure.
I may have imagined that part because I was five, and
right.
All five-year-olds just have no idea what reality is.
Right.
But from there...
And many grown-up theater people, that is true, too.
That's very true. I think I still have a very loose grasp on reality,
yes.
As a matter of fact. So then I went into dance, because every small child wants to be a dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized I was really, really bad at that.
Mm.
Like, all of the pictures, everyone's doing one thing, and I'm doing a totally different thing.
So you dance to your own drummer, or you just, I'm not a dancer, full stop?
Not a dancer,
okay.
Full stop.
All right.
So then I went into acting,
okay.
And joined a community theater group for a youth community theater group.
Yeah.
After about 3 years, realized I was not an actor either.
Mm.
So this is where we get into the fact where I determined I am a triple non-threat. I can't sing, I can't act, I can't dance. So I'm.
And yet, you say that, but yeah, I mean, I think you're not the first person or the last to make this discovery. And yet, you have found a fulfilling life in the theater.
I have. Well, I was really lucky. The high school that I went to in Columbus, Ohio. Yay, Ohio.
Go Bucks.
They happened to have. I went to the Columbus Alternative High School, which is not the school for the really bad kids. It was a magnet school. And they had, instead of going to school on Wednesdays, we had an internship program. And the school would set you up with an internship somewhere in the community. And you could tell them, oh, I want to go here, or I want this type of internship. And there was a person whose job all day, that's what he did. He figured out where you would go and then supervised to make sure you were doing the number of hours that were required. And you got class credit for this. And so my first year, I did the children's theater that the school did. But then my second year, I was really, really lucky, and I got an internship with CATCO, which is the local professional theater.
Okay.
And at that point, they weren't equity or anything, but I was working in their scene shop under their TD.
Yeah.
And learned so much. I mean, I really feel like I have a really strong carpentry background now.
That's awesome. That's more than most of us, including me. Yes.
Well, it was fantastic because, you know, I had essentially 2 years then of just going in and building sets and learning how to move sets and how to paint sets and also, like, how to, you know, I can field strip a Fresnel in like 15 seconds.
Yeah. That's great.
So every
blindfolded under gunfire. Yeah.
Well, and then let me tell you about my sound skills.
Yes.
They are non-existent.
Oh, okay.
Again, that goes back to the not being able to sing. Like, I can't tell a tune.
Not a Foley artist. Okay, fair enough.
No, not a Foley artist.
Listen, we need more carpenters. There's plenty of people making noise in this joint.
Well, so that was really lucky. So then, of course, I go to college, and I'm a theater major. Much to my mother's.
Where'd you go?
I went to Ohio State.
Okay. The Ohio State, excuse me.
The Ohio State University.
Yeah.
So I was a theater major there. I took a little bit of time off in between, tried to be a microbiome major because my mother really... Yeah, she really did not like. She's like, what are you going to fall back on?
We parents have these dreams, but continue.
So then after graduating, I moved to San Francisco. And I moved to San Francisco in 2000. And anyone who was here or remembers early 2000, it was very expensive.
Is it less so now?
No, it's worse now.
Yeah, okay.
It's worse now, but it was really bad then.
I was going to say, when has it never not been in this? But yes, all right.
Well, it was August 2000, it was like it is now, yeah. A little bit easier, actually. I mean, yeah. You only had 50 people lining up for an open house as opposed to 100, and they were only offering 1 year's rent cash instead of 2 years' rent cash.
Right.
So was really, really lucky to find a place to live with a friend of mine, mm-hmm. and then realized that I could not make any money in theater. Like, just could not pay the exorbitant San Francisco rent.
Right.
And...
Had you thought about this before you came here? What brought you here, then, to San Francisco?
I was 23. I hadn't thought about anything.
Okay, all right.
I look back at, like, what I was thinking. I mean, it's great to be that young and naive and be able to make those kinds of leaps.
Yeah.
Because I never would do it now. I would, you know, I'd be like, I have to have a job and know exactly where I'm going to make money.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a friend who needed a roommate, and so I was like, hey, San Francisco seems great.
So you couldn't make a living in the theater, but so you made a living doing something. You got a real job, a day job.
Right, so I got a day job with a temp agency for a year, and then I went, and I'm going to say this, and now all the podcast listeners are going to know, I went to law school.
Oh.
I got a law degree.
Hey, we've all been there.
No.
Yeah, I almost went there. I meant to go there.
That's where you hit rock bottom,
yes.
Is in the law school. I can say that because many of my best friends are lawyers, so
that's,
I can make fun of them.
That's the last sign. Listen, a good friend of mine's daughter just graduated University of California Berkeley's theater program, and I went, have you learned nothing? She's now at Georgetown Law. So there is hope for all of us.
Well, so then I graduated. I passed the California bar, which is hard to do.
Yeah.
On the first try. So that is my one claim to fame, other than the podcast now.
Nice.
That is my other.
Yes, right.
Yeah,
right.
That is, yeah. So then worked for a legal research company for 3 years.
Okay.
Decided that was too much travel. And then worked for our local public radio and television station, if I could buzz market them.
Yeah.
Worked for KQED for 3 years, and I helped with the pledge drives.
Yeah.
In that time, right before, while I was working for that legal research company, I met the man who is the love of my life, and like I get little starry eyes when I start talking about him.
Uh-huh.
And we stayed together, obviously, because he's now my husband.
Okay.
But he made significantly more money than I do.
Oh, nice.
And he's incredibly supportive.
Okay.
And so after burning out of the second non-theater job, he really just was like, hey, why don't I float us for a while, and you can get back into it and do something that actually makes you really happy. Because,
yeah.
I mean, it wasn't...
The law wasn't doing it, legal
reason. No, it was not doing it.
Well, let me ask you this. Did it help at all? Did you, like the gig at KQED or even your first couple of theater gigs, were these in spite of your law degree or did that help in any way?
It helped. I mean, the KQED job definitely it helped. I mean, I was doing a lot of contracts and just knowing like what we were allowed to put on the air as a pledge drive item.
Right.
I think in general, the law degree helps all over the place.
Right.
You know, I mean, if nothing else, it's like I know exactly when I'm getting messed with. You know, I mean, I may not be able to do anything about it, but it does help knowing that.
Right. So your husband said, "Go off, go do something that you love." What did you find?
So I did the only thing I knew to do at the time, because I was not at all connected, having not done anything for almost, I think, about 10 years at this point.
Yeah.
And I went to Craigslist, and I found somebody who was looking for a props person / assistant stage manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I responded, and I think I was the only person who responded because I got the gig. And I ended up having to build a full life-size mummy that was in a life-size body cast.
Nice.
A gigantic jar of teeth. It was a lot of fun. It paid like...
And those seem to be just as much important life skills as a law degree.
You know what?
Yeah.
I think actually more important. Because when you need a jar of teeth, you can't just go to anybody.
No.
And
no.
It was one of the best things I've ever made, honestly.
It's very specialized, very nichey, but in the Bay Area, that's a perfect thing to be.
It comes up surprisingly often.
I would imagine.
Well, from there, some of the people I worked with liked my work, and they asked me to come and do props and ASM for their next show.
Okay.
Which happened to fall at the same time as my wedding. So I ended up, the only show I've ever missed in my entire career was for my wedding.
Yeah, fair enough.
Went in the next day, actually, and they're like, we didn't expect to see you here. And I was like, oh, well, if I'd known that, I would not have come in.
Right.
And then just started applying for things and punching a little bit above my weight. So I started applying for things that even though I knew they were looking for someone maybe right out of college, I figured I took 10 years off, but I didn't really do anything there, so I'm kind of still right out of college.
Right.
Maybe they wanted, they wanted somebody younger.
Right. Yeah, they wanted someone who wasn't going to fall asleep at meetings because she's so old and hasn't, you know, had the second cup of coffee for the day.
And what are you, an old bag of 30, 28 now by this point?
That's very kind of you. Yeah. A good decade older than that,
okay,
you know.
Anyway.
Yeah. So I actually applied for a job here at Marin Theater Company that I knew I wasn't really probably going to get, but as the production assistant for the full year.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get it. I was right. The production manager here at the time was actually very, very kind and said, you know, we're looking for someone who has essentially a little more professional experience and is a little bit more fresh out of college,
right,
which
right.
is totally fair.
Right,
there's
right.
a certain set of skills you have at different points in your life.
Right.
But then she recommended me to the current the previous education department director here,
mm-hmm.
who hired me to help their summer camp.
Oh, nice.
And from there, that education department person left, someone else came in. She recommended me as the assistant production manager here.
Okay.
And I interviewed for that and actually got that job a good 6 months after I decided I never wanted to be a production manager.
Yeah.
So.
But this is another great example of like one way to rise in the theater is to just get any job, take any job in the place and then never leave. You know, just become so invaluable, they keep moving you up.
Well, and that's exactly, I mean, when I decided to get back in, I decided I'm going to pay my dues, which is unfortunately a thing you have to do in the arts. You know,
I think that's true anywhere, in fairness.
Well, most jobs don't ask you to do it for free for a while.
Right, I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so there's not a whole lot of, like, my first gig paid $60, and it was a month and a half of work.
Yeah.
You know, lawyers don't have to do that. Right. Accountants don't have to do that.
Yeah.
But I, you know, decided I wasn't going to be concerned with that because I have the support system of my husband. So I was very lucky with that.
Right.
I could not have done that without him.
Yes, you had the MR grant.
Exactly,
yeah.
Yes.
This is Steve Smith, former director of Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Clown College, a short, bald, middle-aged man, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Starting in about 3 weeks in January 2015, you can see us performing the complete history of Comedy Abridged in 70 cities across the UK and Ireland, plus assorted dates in the US. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to reducedshakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. But then, in the time that you and I had a brief encounter, a brief email encounter years ago when you were at KQED, then you were here at Marin Theater Company, and then you came out to see us at Cincinnati Playhouse. And in between that, between then and now, so a year, you are now on another job. You now have another bigger, better, cooler job.
Well, I was very lucky. So one of the things that Marin does is that they have Bay Area Children's Theater comes in and does three of their Theater for Young Audiences shows in the smaller Lieberman Theater. So I got to know a lot of the people with that company. And when they found themselves in need of changing the position with the company of the production manager and turning it into a production and company manager and really restructuring that and restructuring a lot of their company because there was a lot of growth, they actually came to me, which I was super shocked by. Other people were not as shocked, but I was surprised.
Mm-hmm.
So now I am the production and company manager for Bay Area Children's Theater, which does six main stage shows. We don't even have our own venue, so they all tour to different locations.
Okay.
And we have two touring shows that go to schools. We have the possibility of national tours coming up.
And this is a theater for kids but by adults?
Yes.
Okay.
So the actors are all adults.
Equity?
Non-equity.
Okay.
At this point, we hope someday.
Yes.
We'd really love it. I mean, that's the dream, right?
Right? Yeah,
you know,
it is the dream.
Yeah, that and staying up for 12 hours, working straight. That's living the dream.
Yeah.
But
yeah, right.
Yeah.
So say it again. Production company manager.
Production manager and company manager.
Okay.
So I do both, which is not unusual.
No, it's not unusual. But again, I have to think that your law degree has to help there. You're not the managing director, but you're still.
I think it does. I mean, I'm contracting people to work for me for in really strange positions that change. I mean, you know, yes, I need a lighting designer on almost every show, but depending on which venues those shows are going to, depending on the needs of the show, and I think something that I've really discovered that I love about children's theater is that it can be a lot more fanciful. You know, we do a lot of really crazy, just mind-blowing work, and it's not to say that, you know, straight plays don't do that, but I think that we get to have a lot more of that all the time. Yeah. It's not the once every 2 years kind of thing. It's every single show has all these crazy colors and excitement and new challenges and things that make my heart skip a beat because they're just so amazing.
It's great to hear on a bunch of levels because I cut my teeth professionally doing children's theater back in New Hampshire, and I have frequently thought of the work at the Radio Shakespeare Company as children's theater for grown-ups.
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, the audience is full of children.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at least for 2 hours where you get to go back to that happy place where you can just be young again.
Well, and yet, I think some of the audiences here in Marin, for instance, the grown-up audiences, have not seen enough children's theater. So when they're watching our show, they don't quite know how to react.
There are some very reserved audiences here.
Oh, that gentleman is breaking the fourth wall. Is he allowed to do that? Well, somebody should write a memo.
That was a spot-on Mill Valley accent, by the way.
Very
that
good.
Was
yes,
fantastic.
Yes, yes, it was canny.
It was.
It really was. I feel like I've never left.
I know.
But I do have to say that going back to what you said about our brief interaction when I was at KQED, is that one of the things that actually inspired me, and I'm maybe a little pandering here, but it's absolutely true, is that I've been listening to the podcast since its inception. I think I'm maybe the third episode where I started because I was familiar with the work, really love laughing. So I was like, hey, I'll check that out. I happen to be a random fan shout out from way back in the day.
That's very cool. I've now met a random fan. This is great.
but it was one of those things that when I listened to the podcast, sometimes I would have to just sort of binge listen only because it made me want to get back into theater. I think it's actually one of the things that inspired me to do that when I left my job at KQED, I'd actually intended to go to medical school because I was like, oh, this isn't really working for me. Maybe I'll go and pursue that previous dream I had of being a doctor.
Right.
But I think the podcast actually is what reminded me of listening to, oh yeah, that's what that life is like, and I really miss it.
Well, then now I have to ask your legal advice. If the podcast is driving people into theater, I don't want to accept any responsibility for that. How can I? What sort of disclaimer should I provide?
I think you're probably okay. You may want to have a little. The podcast is not responsible for people's life choices. I and my husband would probably both agree that this is a good life choice. I'm much happier than I had been. And you know, when I was leaving KQED, I realized like I'm going to be 40 someday. I'm going to do it no matter what. I can either be really happy when I'm 40 or I can be miserable. And yes, I make a lot less money. However, it's worth it.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your tales of theater epiphanies via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews of this podcast on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey. He's had the good sense to say out of theater, Matthew Croak. Music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Sue Penhall. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Steve Smith, former director of Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Clown College. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 421 1263rds of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
So this is a story with a happy ending.
Absolutely. So far, I mean, it's an ongoing. I mean, I hope I'm not. You know, there's no plans for my demise at the end of the night. Right?
Well, no plans, but we'll see how it goes.
Fair enough. You know, it is Mill Valley. It's a rough neighborhood.
Very tough town.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.